Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
A question. In fact, the question of the day. To lose or not to lose? There is your question of the day, at least as it relates to the Lakers. For any and everybody else in any other sport across the world, of course that's not a question. It's only a question for the Lake Show because of the especially horrendous jam that the Lake Show finds itself in right now. As an example, they can go beat the Pelicans tonight like they did the other night and clinch the 7 seed. And what will that get them? That'll get them into the postseason. That'll get them a playoff spot. Good news. However, it will also get them a series with the defending champs, a Western Conference Finals rematch with the best player in the world, and the team with the best odds to win the West. A team that owns the Lakers. A team that the Lakers do not match up with well at all. And frankly, a team that the Lakers shouldn't want a damn thing to do with, period. In other words, win tonight, and the Lake Show's reward is the Denver Nuggets. When asked about those prospects, LeBron said, exactly, LeCap. Now here's the other option. You back off this one. You send the Pelicans to the slaughter in Denver instead. Then you turn around and you try to play for the 8th seed and a shot at the OKC Thunder. Might even give you a chance to rest AD. Hey, by the way, AD, what's good? What's good, AD?
AD, what's good, baby?
It would definitely give them a better chance in the first round. Yes, I said it. And Thunder fan, don't at me. This is in no way meant to be a slight. This is in no way meant to disrespect the Thunder. Absolutely no disrespect to the Thunder. I actually love the Thunder. They're young. They're talented as hell. They earn that one seed. But, did I mention, they're young. And they have next to no playoff experience. And while I'm not saying that you have to have it to make a deep run, I am saying if I'm the Lakers, I would much rather take my chances against OKC than I would the Nuggets. Because it says here they have no chance against the Nuggets. They can't beat those guys. They just can't. No reasonable person thinks that they can. Hell, even LeCap has to know they can't beat the Nuggets. There is one issue, though. And the flip side of that is, even though I think they're a hell of a lot better off losing tonight, the flip side is there is then a single elimination game against either Golden State or Sacramento, who have both also handled the Lakers easily this season. A one-game elimination against two teams that have had success against them in the regular season. And in that one-game elimination, of course, anything can happen. So, if the Lakers lose tonight, smartly, but then they go on and they lose to either Golden State or Sacramento, then they miss the playoffs altogether, and then that's catastrophic. And then you had an absolute waste of an incredible year for LeCap. Win tonight, and you at least guarantee yourself a chance to get your ass kicked by the Nuggets over four games, right? Pretty easy math. So, what would you rather have? I mean, another sweep at the hands of Denver, that would suck. But four losses in a row in the first round is still better than not even getting to the first round. Am I right? So, what I'm saying is, essentially, the Lake Show is stuck between a ham and a hard place. Or really, Darvin Ham is stuck between a rock and a hard place. Because he's the first one gone if this does all go to hell. But then again, I'm not sure how much power he even has over the situation. Or if he has any power over the situation. I mean, calling for LeCap to LeTank tonight is above the Ham's pay grade. It might even be above Rob Lowe Palinka's pay grade.
Rob Pastinka.
Seriously, who is the one who gets the assignment of telling LeCap he needs to go out and LeTank tonight? No one in the organization tells LeCap that. LeCap tells the organization that. or he lets his guys from Clutch do it for him. Or he just takes it upon himself to ensure that it happens. He knows how it is. He knows the Lakers' best shot to get through the first round is to go through OKC. And that's not even some hot take. That's just common sense. Not only is Denver the defending champ and the favorites in the West, and they're led by the best player in the world, they do own the Lake Show. The Lakers have lost 8 straight to the Nuggets, including, of course, the Western Conference Finals last year when the Lake Show got their asses swept. So you tell me, exactly what has changed since then? What's changed? Exactly nothing, except that Joker might be even better than he was then, if that's possible. And given that much of his coaching counterparts routinely turn the ham inside out, the hell do you think Michael Malone is going to do to this guy? And yes, even with LaCap and AD, if he goes, hey, AD, by the way, what's good, yo?
AD, what's good, baby?
Even if LaCap and AD go against the Nuggets, it's still a terrible matchup for the Lakers pretty much across the board. So what are we talking about? The lesser of two evils. The defending champs are 8-0 against the Lakers the past 2 years. The two NoCal teams are 7-1 against the Lakers this season. Pick your poison. Me, I'm picking a single elimination game with the right to play OKC and avoid Denver. Hey, maybe they end up getting slapped by both. But I would rather take my chances and go to battle against OKC than I would the Nuggets, if I'm the Lake Show. I mean, there's nothing counterintuitive about that. That's just common sense, especially since OKC is the only team in the entire equation that the Lakers have had any success against this year. That's actually the only counterintuitive thing. They were actually 3-1 against the Thunder this year. You know, back to AD for a minute. Have I asked? What's good?
AD, what's good, baby?
Credit for starting a career-high 76 games, AD. But a hell of a lot of good it did you, right? And them, if you're in the playing game. My man, you want to help your team? You want to help your team, future face of the franchise? Then don't play tonight. Get some extra rest. Lose. Come back. And then help the team that you're supposed to lead into a first-round matchup with the Thunder. Hey, Laker fan, where do you come out on this? V in the fee. That's your bat signal. Where do you come out on this? What should they do? What's going to happen in that game? Meantime, that's kind of just the appetizer anyway, right? That's just the opener for the main event. The battle for NoCal. Warriors v. Kings. Or what's left of the Dynasty Dubs versus Light the Beam.
Hey, Frisco fan. I'm talking to the entire region now. Sactown, Golden State, Frisco fan. Hey, Frisco resident. Hey, Frisco fan, are you ready? Hey, Frisco fan, you know what's up, right? You know what time it is, don't you? It's winner take all, Frisco fan. You know what that means? Winner take all means season's over for the loser. You know what that means too, right? The loser goes home, but the winner gets all the dank nugs. Winner gets all the dank nugs. Loser gets all the dregs and the stems and the seeds. Am I right? Hey, dude. Stakes don't get any higher, do they, my dudes? What up, Frisco fan? The only problem with that, Frisco fan, it's kind of funny when I do that, but what if, you know like how your parents say if you make that face, it'll get stuck? What if my voice got stuck, Frisco fan, and I was a perpetual stoner like you? That would suck. But then those very same dank nugs would make it better. Am I right again? Anyway, huge game. It's not just the season on the line.
it could possibly be the end of an era for the Dubs if they can't get a dub tonight. As for Sacramento, man, how devastating would it be? Thank you, Albie. I knew that was coming. How about Sacramento? How devastating would it be after Golden State got them last year? Now, the good news is they can turn that thing around in one night. The bad news is if Golden State gets them again, then they can't light the beam in this winner-take-all game after they failed to light the beam at home in Game 7 last year. And then top to bottom, what about the association and this whole notion of a play-in? Losing would be a disaster for every team or either team in the late game tonight, which is exactly how it's supposed to be, I guess, in a way. This is how Commissioner Ears wanted it when he drew up the Ears play-in tournament. You were supposed to desperately want to win these play-in games. It was supposed to create urgency, desperation, interest for so many other fans. You were supposed to want these games the way the Dubs and the Kings and the Lakers even desperately, well, Lakers shouldn't, desperately want these games. But I'll tell you what was not supposed to happen. What was not supposed to happen was the team with arguably the greatest player ever having to win to get in. Or imagine a first ballot laser like Steph having to play the alleged GOAT for the right to make the playoffs. I mean, dang, Ears. Look at you now. And now I'm looking for you clones to get up in here. I told you what I think. What do you think? What should the Lake Show do tonight? Do they win and advance and at least guarantee themselves the right to get their asses kicked for four more games? Or are they better off playing a single elimination game to avoid the Nuggets and take a shot at OKC, who they did have success against, who is young and inexperienced? And Frisco fan, who you got in the battle for NoCal? Is Sacramento seriously? I can understand where Golden State fans kind of bored by this whole thing. You know, a little concerned about their dynasty, but Sacktown. Sacktown. These guys can't do you again. Sacktown, I know you care. Get up in here. 1-800-636-8686. Hopefully this will not be a sequel to Dre leaving a footprint on Sabonis' chest cavity. Hopefully he won't stomp the spleen. Stomp the spleen. Stomp the spleen. Yeah, I need a reset of that incident like I need a hole in my head. Or even worse. Even worse than a hole in my head? A call from Ryan from Sacktown.
Oh, Johnny boy.
Oh, Ryan, put the phone down. So I've got a quick question for you. Are you looking for ultimate comfort and pain relief? Let's compare G-Defy shoes to other shoe brands that promise comfort and support and pain relief. Typical shoe brands rely on EVA soles for cushioning, but G-Defy offers so much more. G-Defy goes above and beyond with VersoShock technology, providing superior shock absorption and energy return if you suffer from foot, knee, or back pain. G-Defy's advanced technology may help provide you with the relief you deserve. I can't even believe these shoes and the difference they make for me. G-Defy shoes also offer two free supportive orthotics to help improve your body's biomechanics, resulting in proper body alignment and ultimate comfort. Yes, they do all that. So whether you're an athlete, a busy parent, or just somebody who's always on the go, G-Defy shoes offers the versatility and the comfort that your feet crave and need. Say goodbye to discomfort. G-Defy is more than EVA soles. It could be your path to unparalleled comfort and pain relief. Visit G-Defy.com today. Experience ultimate comfort and pain relief at G-Defy.com. G-D-E-F-Y.com. Use the code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. That's code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. G-Defy shoes. They are incredible. We are joined by their manager, Derek Shelton. Derek, it is great to have you back on. How are you?
Jim, good to be back, man. Always enjoy talking to you.
You too. Appreciate it very much, Derek. Thanks so much. So for the second straight year, your team is out quickly. You've won 11 of your first 17. Looking at things so far, what are you most pleased with when you look at your team and its great start?
I think full contribution from our group. I mean, 26 guys, 27, 28. You know, we have some guys on the IL now, but everybody has contributed, which I think in the early going has been really important for us to get off to the start.
You know, Derek, you and I spoke in mid-April last year, and you went 20-9 that month. Ultimately, you finished up with 76 wins. Given how many young guys you have and what they learned last year, is there any doubt in your mind that they're ready to take that next step and compete for a postseason berth?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. We got off to a quick start last year, you know, and then we had some struggles with some of our younger guys. The fact that they are a year older and they have those reps. And then just as importantly, we've added veteran guys into that group, guys that have been on the field in playoff games, in competition, in playoff hunts, which was really important for us, you know, kind of stabilizing our young core.
Pirates manager Derek Shelton joining us, you know, in terms of that kind of veteran leadership, obviously. I mean, baseball can be such an unforgiving and humbling sport, but then that said, you've got Andrew McCutchen, and him coming back a year ago was such a feel-good story. So what was it like for you to see him hit his 300th career home run on Sunday, and then how much of a stabilizing presence is he?
Well, I'll go to the second part first. He is a stabilizing presence. I mean, and I think as we talked about a little bit last year, a lot of the young guys in our clubhouse, you know, look at Kutch as the Pirates because they grew up watching him play. And that's not to say that Kutch is old. That's just to say that we have a bunch of young kids that watched, you know, 13, 14, 15 when you know, Kutch was doing his thing, winning an MVP. So, yeah, he is a stabilizing presence in our clubhouse. And then the first point, him hitting 300, was extremely emotional for all of us. I think really kind of going off the other point is because of how much he means to this club, to our community, you know, and even to baseball. I mean, Kutch is good for baseball. And the fact that he was at 299 and then got hurt last year and almost had to sit for 6 months on it. And I do think it was providing a little bit of anxiety for him, you know, never having been in a milestone moment like that, but, you know, wanting to get to it. And I think he even said after he got to it, it was like almost a sense of relief. But it was really cool to see because he had two balls earlier in the year that hit the top of the fence, one in Washington, one in Pittsburgh. So it was nice to see, you know, one actually get over.
Yeah, it's so well explained by you. It's gut-wrenching. Can you imagine he was sitting on 299 for 6 months, finally comes all the way back, and then has a couple at the top of the fence, and then finally gets one over? Derek Shelton joining us. I mean, that's got to be gut-wrenching. Then you've got your shortstop, O'Neal Cruz, and he was limited to only 9 games last season after he fractured his leg in April. Obviously a devastating blow given how unique a player he is. How has he looked to you so far this season, and then how critical has he been to the team's start, both with his bat and his glove?
Well, I think he is very critical. You know, one of the things we're seeing right now is some of that rust showing with not having played for a full year. And we know we're going to go through stretches, you know, where O'Neal looks really good and we're going to go through some stretches where he struggles. We have to find that common balance of consistency. And really that's what we're searching for right now, looking for. And a lot of that just comes from having played only 9 games last year. I mean, it's really hard for a major league player to miss an entire season of at-bats and pick up where he left off. So the consistency portion is something that we're continuing to focus on. But, I mean, this is one of the more young, talented players in the game.
No doubt. Exciting young player. Derek Shelton joining us. Obviously, it's going to start with pitching, right? You've got an ace in Mitch Keller. How excited were you to see the team lock him up to a new 5-year extension? And then how much does he set the tone for the entire rotation?
Well, I think he definitely sets the tone for the rotation. I mean, even going to, you know, Sunday's game where he goes head-to-head with Zach Wheeler, who, you know, obviously is a number one and one of the best pitchers in baseball, and goes 7 strong innings. I just love the commitment from our ownership group with our young core players, whether it's Hayes or Reynolds and now Keller, of like, all right, these are the guys that we want to build around. These are the guys that we want here, and we're going to commit to these guys. You know, we're going to commit to making sure that they're Pirates. And it was very important because we had Brian and Key Brian on the offensive side of the ball that we had committed to, and it was really important for us to get you know, Mitch Dunn and know that he's going to be here stabilizing our rotation.
You know, Derek, speaking of the rotation, I had a conversation with Terry Francona last week, who is enjoying his first season away from the dugout. I asked him what he thought the reason was for the wave of injuries the pitchers are suffering to start the season. His take was, one of the things he pointed out, was how hard young pitchers are throwing before they get to the bigs and the pressure they may be putting on their elbow by how they grip the ball with the current emphasis on spin rate. Do you have any theories as to why we've seen so many injuries this early in the year to pitchers?
Yeah, I think it's a hard thing to pinpoint, but I'm going to agree with Tito here. I don't think this is just a problem that's a major league problem. I think this is a problem that goes all the way down to youth baseball, with the fact of the amount that guys throw, as hard as they throw, the emphasis on spin rate, the emphasis on kids playing year-round instead of playing other sports. So now there's stress on that. You know, I mean, when you and I grew up, and I'm not saying we're old, but like you played.
Oh, I am. I am, Skip.
I am too. You played seasonal. You know, you played football or basketball or wrestled or did whatever. Now kids play this year round. There's so much stress even before they get into college professional ranks. So I think the reason we're seeing these is more, you know, throughout the game than just specific to professional baseball. So I would definitely agree with Tito in that respect.
No, I think you're right. Like, I'm here in California, and both our kids played baseball exclusively. They didn't play any other sport. They just played baseball, and they did so year-round, and I see it working. I know exactly what you're talking about. Let me ask you, you also added 7-time All-Star and 2-time World Series champ Aroldis Chapman to the team in the offseason, and this is a guy who made his Major League debut back in 2010, yet Derek's still nasty, still filthy. He got ejected last night after giving up the go-ahead double. I mean, obviously a vet knows how far he can verbally push things with an ump. What went down last night in that regard?
Yeah, I just think he probably went. I mean, he was frustrated, you know. And like you said, he has been a great addition to us and a great addition to our bullpen because he has won World Series rings, and that's really important for our group. I think last night a little bit of frustration boiled over, and you know, maybe a magic word or two too much. And you know, veteran guys know where they can go, and sometimes, you know, there's a fine line, and I think he crossed it a little bit last night and obviously got ejected.
We're talking to Derek Shelton for another moment or so. So, Derek, when you look at the divisions, like the Dodgers, the Braves, they've dominated the NL West and the NL East respectively, but it's more parity, of course, than the NL Central in recent years. How does the Central look to you this year, top to bottom?
It looks very, very consistent, and I think you see that with the start that people are off to. There's a lot of young, good players in the National League Central. I mean, if you look up and look what the Reds have and what the Brewers have, I mean, there's some exciting young players. And then obviously the Cardinals have that core group of veterans that they have. So it's one of those things where I think there's a ton of parity in our division. I mean, you've seen everybody get off to good starts, and you know, it's going to be a little bit of a dogfight because of the fact that none of us have really played each other. We have played nobody in our division yet. So we play the Brewers next week. It'll be the first time. And then I think once we get in the division, we're really going to find out how it fares.
Yeah, man, it's fun. I like that division. I think it's really interesting. So one last thought. How challenging is it? Part of the job is to develop players on the major league level, but at the same time win right now. How do you go about approaching that?
You guys still got to teach. I think the one thing that we've learned is guys are getting to the big leagues faster, not just in Pittsburgh, but everywhere. And part of the development is going to happen here. And we're in that really strange period of time where a lot of players that would have been in A-ball during the COVID year that was missed, that they're coming to the big leagues. So they missed an entire year of development. And then they had the second year of development that was cut short a little bit because of the schedule. So I think it's more important now than ever because of the fact that the players that came through college, that came through young minor league baseball or low minor league baseball at that time, are getting to the big leagues. We have to continue to teach her, and it's really important that the staffs know that.
So I was going to say a quick follow-up, and then I'll let you go. Are they further behind, or is there more catching up to do from the mental aspect of the game or the physical aspect?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think part of it, I would defer to the physical aspect, just more because that's what we can, you know, that's what we can objectively tell you. But mentally, I think, you know, we have to make sure that we continue to get guys to understand what the major leagues is about, because it's extremely hard. And when you get rushed here and you don't have a lot of failures, and your first failure is in the big leagues, it can kind of swallow you up a little bit. So the mental aspect of it is extremely important. It's just a little bit harder to measure.
That's it. He is the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's in his fifth year, and again, they're out quickly. They are 11-6. They're in New York to play the Mets. Derek, appreciate you. Appreciate the relationship, and always good to have you on the show. Skip, thanks so much.
All right, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Great talking to you, Derek Shelton. Clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. No, we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Shriveled, dry, and tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and it's tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors that satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? One of the few things that I do have a rule about, and one of the few things that I do ask of you, is that you not make personal appearance show fodder. I mean, I would think for pretty obvious reasons, right? Let's not make fun of what people look like. You know why? In most cases, they have no say or no choice in what they look like. You know why else? We're not on the playground. We're not in third grade. Personal appearance is not show fodder. So that's always been a rule of the program. Well, post the Rat Fam. Obviously, it was not a rule when we had the Rat Fam back in the day. I had a whole family of humans that looked like rats. Obviously, personal appearance was show fodder back then. Don't believe me? Ask Corey Pavin. Anyway, that was then, and this is now. What? Right. So that's a show rule. Personal appearance, not show fodder. However, it is not a rule that extends to social media. Obviously. In fact, on social media, personal appearance is basically the main fodder. Personal appearance is the best fodder. Especially when you have that one wild image that jumps out from your timeline and starts going viral and just keeps getting reposted and reposted. You know, the multiplier effect. That snowball is rolling downhill and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the thing about that game is it happens every single day. Every single day on social, that happens. Unfortunately for Daniel Jones, it happened to him. He provided the internet with exactly that kind of image yesterday. And of course, the internet did what it does and had an absolute field day. Now, personally, again, I think that's unfair. You know, frankly, I think it's kind of cheap. And I think it's lazy. Now, yes, he did show up to a presser with his eyes bugging out yesterday. That I cannot deny. Yes, he looked like he had invisible clamps holding his eyes pried open. Like, he looked like that dude back in the day in Clockwork Orange, just without that crazy metal contraption. Like, somehow his eyes were just naturally pried open, which is somehow even freakier, right? Or maybe he had, like, invisible toothpicks. Maybe he was channeling or paying tribute to the OG himself, the dude who made it fashionable to be all bug-eyed and crap. Adam Gase. Who will ever forget eyes? There's a reason why the guy was glossed eyes. Adam Gase. And notice eyes never got another gig. Probably because he never blinked. Anyway, personally, while I'm here to acknowledge it, I'm not here to bury the guy for it. Because again, while the internet had a field day with it, here, that would be considered personal appearance smack. And I don't need to talk about the dude's appearance to talk about the Giants football. Can I repeat that? This is the difference between me and a lot of you. I do not need to talk about this guy's appearance in order to talk about Giants football. There's a lot to say about Danny Bug Eyes without crushing him for his eyes bugging out of his dome. What exactly is the dude supposed to do anyway about his giant bugging eyeballs? Like, I know y'all had your fun on the X. I know everybody was saying that Danny was just doing his best Adam Gase or doing a Rashay Caldwell in the Super Bowl. R.I.P.R. They were just glossing him, Danny, deer in the headlights. I mean, the whole thing was kind of brutal and kind of silly and kind of lame. But again, I'm not here to pile on any of that, much less all of that. It's just not fair to hit Danny turnovers for his bizarre, giant, bulging eyeballs. However, it is totally fair to hit Danny turnovers for being Danny turnovers, especially since it created a giant headache for the G pupils. G-men. And how they're supposed to proceed in the offseason. You see, Danny fumbles and interceptions and eventually one day glaucoma. Danny INT is still confident, though. Do not let those sketchy eyes bugging out of his head fool you. Danny thinks that he is still the best quarterback for the Giants. He said it himself while his eyes were popping out of his noggin yesterday.
If you feel, if you're healthy, you know, this summer in training camp, which you hope to be, and going on into the season, you feel you're the best quarterback that the Giants can have and start their season with?
I do, yes.
Wow. I do, yes. Not only is that so convincing, yo, dude, dude, give me some space. Stop invading my personal space, man. Get out of my grill. Yes, I do. Dude, you better feel that way. You better feel like you're their best option. Considering they're about to chip you off $35.5 million, they're not giving you that bag because your eyes are bugging the hell out of your head. This dude has the third highest base salary in the NFL this season. He's 10th in the NFL in total cash coming his direction for 2024. This dude's going to make more money this year than Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Dak Prescott. So yes, he better be their best option. And also, what else is the guy supposed to say? How is Danny Bug Eyes supposed to answer the question, do you feel like you're the best quarterback the Giants can have to start the season? I mean, it's even amazing that somebody would even ask him that question. Like, it's a legitimate question. I don't know what's more amazing, that it's a legitimate question or that it's a legitimate question. Because it's a legitimate question, despite the fact that he's going to make $35.5 million. But then again, what is his answer supposed to be? And let's not get into that just yet. Or maybe, you know, I'm really into this Drake May kid. If he's around at 6, I got to say, as much as I love to ball and as big as my eyes are, I got to grab that guy at 6. I got to take Drake May at 6. In fact, I have to take him and I have to start him. I mean, honestly, guys, have you seen me play? I know my eyes are scaring the hell out of you right now, but remember my quarterbacking. Now, that's really terrifying. Hey, Danny, are you the best QB the Giants can have to start the season? Actually, no, man, I don't think so. I think right about now, I'm probably the third best option we have. I mean, who wouldn't want to see Drew Locke get a real shot? And if not Drew, then how do you not let Tommy Cutlets start? At least Tommy Cutlets is fun. If we're going to get our asses kicked, and we probably will, wouldn't it be way more entertaining to do it with T. Cutlets than my boring, vanilla, bug-eyed ass? I mean, obviously, there's no other way for Danny Deer in the headlights to answer that question. But that doesn't mean that it's not an interesting question, at least for the Giants overall, as is the question, what do you do with that sixth pick? Eyes aside, because personal appearance is not show fodder. Honestly, what do the Giants do with that sixth pick? You could take a quarterback, but it's also possible that the top four quarterbacks might be gone by then. But if you pass on the chance to take a quarterback, and if a quarterback does not fall to you at 6, then where does that leave you? And you can't move up. Then you're looking at running back Danny Gase for $30 million plus yet again, which does not exactly seem like a very good plan. In fact, it sounds like a bad plan. It sounds like a terrible plan. Even Danny Caldwell would admit that that's a bad plan. One bonus thought on Daniel Gase. And remember, personal appearances are not show fodder. I'm not having that. But tell me this dude doesn't look like a bug-eyed Jim Carrey. Tell me he doesn't, and I will tell you to open up your freaking eyes as wide as Daniel Carey's eyes. You see, there's plenty to say about Daniel Deer in the headlights and the Giants besides ripping this dude for his crazy eyes at a press conference. And I just proved it. I proved I'm not about the low-hanging fruit, that I can actually talk football as opposed to just how a person looks. So save your personal appearance smack emails and ex posts with more nicknames. Just save it. If you have a take on the Giants and what they should do about their quarterback situation and what they should do with that sixth pick, you know where to find me. I'm here for that. I'm here for that, but not all that other crap. I don't know. The one thing I would say about that guy, you'd think with eyes like that, this dude would see the field better than he does. You'd think he'd have better vision than he does. How can the guy ever miss a read with eyes that are that wide ass opened? How could he ever miss anything? It'd be impossible for any D coordinator, even the best, to disguise any coverage or any kind of exotic blitz scheme when you got a quarterback who's standing in the pocket with his eyes that wide assed open. There's no way that guy would miss anything. There's no such thing as a blind side. There's a left side. There's a right side. There's just sides. The guy would not miss anything. Boy, you want to talk about peripheral vision. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts are extremely knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they are friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Rome. Once again, OReillyAuto.com/Rome. Also, the author of Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. Of course, I'm talking about Ben Golliver. Ben, it is so good to have you back on the show. What's good, Ben? How are you?
Oh, I'm great, Jim. Just here in Sacramento getting ready for this play-in game between the Kings and the Warriors. You know, Warriors season on the line, and the Lakers are playing tonight, too. So it's my favorite time of the year. How are you?
Good, good, Ben. I'm actually awesome. I was going to start in those very two areas, but since you're in Northern California, why don't we start right there? It is win or go home between the Kings and Warriors. Golden State took out Sactown, of course, in 7 last year. They split the seasonal series this year. Who do you like in this one? What do you think it comes down to?
Well, first of all, I like the fans and the viewers because you got a great rivalry between these two Northern California teams. It's big brother, it's little brother. And don't forget, Steph Curry sent the Kings home last year in Game 7 with 50 points in their building, in their house where they were trying to light the beam. He went absolutely nuclear, and they haven't forgotten that. So I think that's going to give the Warriors some confidence. Clearly, they're playing better basketball here over the last month. And the Kings have had some injury issues that have really thinned out their roster. I would caution people against just automatically picking the Golden State Warriors. I think Sacramento, they know what they want to do. They've been getting great play all season long from De'Aaron Fox and DeMontis Sabonis. Of course, Fox was electric in that first round series last year, but he got injured and banged up a little bit and wasn't quite the same down the stretch of that series. So maybe he comes out and has a big game. He's the best player on the court. They've got a shot. If I had to pick, though, I'm taking the Warriors. They've done a very nice job of countering Domantas Sabonis in the past. They've got some bigs who give him trouble and keep him away from the rim. And, of course, there's the Steph Curry factor. You know, this guy wants to be back in the playoffs. It's been a very up-and-down season, challenging season for the Warriors with Draymond suspension and all the other roster changes. You know, certain guys getting benched, you know, other guys getting promoted to the starting lineup. And I think in this format, you know, Steph Curry is going to pull these guys through.
You and I are on the same page on that one, Ben. Ben Golver joining us. So, Ben, what about the other matchup, the 7-8 game? You've got Lakers and the Pelicans. L.A. pounded them Sunday. How do you see tonight's game? And, Ben, do you buy any part of that argument that the loser actually benefits by avoiding Denver in the first round?
Well, I wouldn't want to play Denver ever, so I understand where that argument's coming from, but I don't think you want to drop a game where, you know, it is double elimination for these teams, right? So if they lose this game, they get another shot on Friday. But especially from the Pelican side, they can't be worried about Denver. They need to be looking in the mirror, Jim. You know, I don't know if you've seen these two big high-profile games they've had against the Lakers. One was in the in-season tournament where they completely rolled over in Vegas, just embarrassed themselves on national TV. And then on Sunday, they have a chance to avoid all this play-in stuff. They could have claimed the sixth seed if they had won on Sunday. And guess what? They fell on their face again against the Lakers. So to me, this is a gut check moment for the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, you know, if you can't win tonight at home against this Lakers team that's punked you twice, you don't really deserve to be in the playoffs, right? That has to be their mentality. If I'm Willie Green, that's what I'm telling the team. It starts with Zion Williamson. You know, he's a guy, he's kind of a one-pitch pitcher, Jim. Like, he wants to go right at the rim over and over again. And LeBron James and Anthony Davis have done a nice job defensively of taking that away from him. So he's got to figure out some other ways to score. His teammates have got to figure out ways to support him better. But on the Lakers side, they've got all the momentum late season. LeBron really cranked it up on Sunday, moving the ball all over the place masterfully. Now, much like Steph Curry, you hate to bet against him in sort of a Game 7 type setting. And that's what this game's going to feel like tonight. So I think the Lakers are going to do it again to the Pelicans. And then the Pelicans are going to have some real questions about, do they even want to be in the playoffs? Can they pick themselves up off the ground?
Ben Golver joining us. All right, Ben. Alvy, what was that? All right, Ben. So never mind the ding, Ben. So in terms of questions about do you even want to be there, how about just questions about the Milwaukee Bucks overall? Now we come to find out that Giannis is not going to be ready for the start of the series against the Pacers. Ben, you probably would even argue and agree with me that they already had major issues going up against Indiana. You said something recently about Damian Lillard. You said that he had a strong case as the league's most underwhelming star this year. It is a strong statement. What makes you say so?
No, he's the most disappointing player in the league, Jim. I'll say it's stronger for you. You know, sometimes I tone it down for the newspaper, but I think he's been the biggest disappointment in the NBA, period. I don't see any other way around it. Think back to when they made that trade. We all thought the Milwaukee Bucks were going to cruise 55 wins, maybe 60 wins. It was going to be Milwaukee and Boston in the Eastern Conference, right? Well, look at the standings. It's Boston and nobody else in the Eastern Conference because the Bucks just have not taken care of their business. You look at the interpersonal chemistry between Giannis and Dame when those guys are on the court together, it kind of feels like a corporate merger, right? Where they're like two separate companies who are trying to come together, but they haven't really figured it out yet. It's not really working. That's really been the vibe on offense. It's sort of my turn, your turn. They don't necessarily make each other worse, but they're definitely not making each other better. And then because they traded for Lillard, they really need him to play his best basketball because, you know, they lose a Grayson Allen in that trade, right? They lose some of their depth. They're plugging in these other pieces that really aren't that great defensively. They just don't have enough, in my opinion, to get by without Giannis. So they got to do whatever they can possibly do to get that calf right and get him back in the series. And he is by far their biggest matchup advantage against Indiana because they're a little bit soft inside. Giannis averages 40-plus points against the Pacers this year because he's just going right at the rim, and Miles Turner and those guys can't stop him. That's the way to beat the Pacers is to take advantage of their poor defense. If this becomes a shootout where it's like Tyrese Halliburton versus Damian Lillard, that will favor the Pacers because they've had this incredible offense all season long and because they face no pressure whatsoever. You can just kind of feel the roof caving in on Milwaukee if they're going to drop one of those early games. in that series, and they just haven't had the chemistry right. Doc Rivers has not been able to turn it around after the midseason coaching change that Milwaukee made. It could get dark very, very early. And I just hope for everybody's sake, Giannis can get back on the court because, you know, he's been the only truly reliable thing about the Bucks this year, and they're going nowhere without him.
Ben Golliver breaking it down. Ben, what about the Celtics? They are the top seed, and they're going to wait to find out who their first-round opponent is. Obviously, they cruised right through the regular season. We'll find out, but if you had to guess, do you think that they have solved their late-game issues that have killed them in the past two postseasons?
Well, Jim, you know, a good way to avoid those kinds of late-game problems, just blow everybody out so you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
You know? And I think that's really what's been under-discussed about the Celtics this year. They have been a machine to the point where those late-game situations, they still come back to bite them every once in a while, but a whole lot of the time, it just doesn't even matter because they win by 10, 15, 20 points. I think they've actually been underrated this season because they've been boring, because they've been killing everyone so consistently, which you don't see very often in the NBA. They haven't gotten enough credit, I don't think, because of how just consistent they are night to night. The bracket in the playoffs just broke perfectly for them. Now, what they want to have happen is Philadelphia to beat Miami, in my opinion, in the play-in. That way, Philadelphia goes to the other side of the bracket with Milwaukee, with New York, the teams that I would view kind of as their biggest threats. Now, I know some Celtics fans are still scarred by the Miami Heat, you know, beating them in last year's Eastern Conference Finals. I think these Celtics are a lot better, and I think these Heat are worse than they were last year. So if I'm Boston, I would not fear that rematch in the first round. In fact, I would take Boston in five games in that series. And from there, they have a very favorable path because it would be probably Cleveland or Orlando in the second round. I think if you're a Celtics fan, now is the time to be tooting your own horn. Like, forget about the late game choke issues that have, you know, cost you, you know, big time series like the finals and the Eastern Conference Finals. You've got Porzingis to help. You've got Jrue Holiday to help on defense, and you have by far the best chemistry and the best health of any team in that Eastern Conference bracket. You know, Milwaukee's banged up, New York's banged up, Cleveland's been banged up. You know, Miami's kind of had guys in and out. Joel Embiid's just rushing back from this knee surgery. Like, Boston's just sitting pretty. All their main guys are healthy, ready to roll. I would much rather be the Celtics than anybody else in the East.
Ben Golliver joining us. Ben, I got about a minute. Really quickly, what about the Thunder? I mean, they are the number one seed in the West. They're very, very talented, but they're very, very young. They don't have that playoff experience. Do you think that's an issue? How concerned are you that they have not been there before?
I'm not all that concerned because, look, the tricky part is if they get the Lakers, because the Lakers have given them problems this year. So, like, if L.A. were to lose tonight and then win on Friday, L.A.'s size up front has kind of given the undersized Thunder a little bit of challenges. But I think they're going to beat anybody else that comes out of that play-in tournament because they're way more cohesive, because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a star who can score from anywhere and get to the free throw line. They've got Jalen Williams to help close games. They've got Chet Holmgren, to me, who I think is the number two Rookie of the Year guy, but also should have been on some people's Defensive Player of the Year ballots for how well he holds down their backline defense. And it's just one of these teams where five fingers makes the fist, you know, and those teams always get overlooked. Maybe they don't have the big, flashy stars. They don't have a name like a Steph Curry or a LeBron James, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been incredible all year long. His teammates love him. They rally around him. They're very well coached. They're disciplined on offense and defense. They're the number one seed for a reason. And I think the only one of those play-in teams that could give them a push would be the Lakers because of the size factor. Otherwise, they're going to take care of Sacramento. They're going to take care of New Orleans. They take care of Golden State.
My man Ben, peaking at the right time. He is an NBA national writer for the Washington Post, also the author of Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. Ben, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for getting us ready. Always good to have you. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Jim. Take care, man.
Ben Golliver. Let's go to Phoenix quickly. Tony, my man. Tony, what's going on?
Damn, Rome, after that introduction, I don't know what I'm going to do. First off, a quick reaction on Daniel the Chameleon. We'll just stop talking about him and let him disappear off with those little giants. Second, that jungle crack was good yesterday, Rome. I ain't going to lie. That's why I'm back today, homie, and I'm here to set everybody straight. It might sound like I'm a little breathing hard again. That's because I work, homie, like everybody else out here in paradise. I'm out here grinding. I got a little time to make a phone call here and there, so I'm going to try to lobby it out, like you said. Now, for those clones, those ones in the email, this one's for you, clones. You better get back into that scum goal that you call a hole. All you want to do is call out people with holes. That's everything, anything that gets you from 6 to midnight. Well, guess what, clones? There's one thing that I can bet you for sure. In honor of it being Jackie Robinson yesterday, here's a little take for you. I bet you, Jim Rome, one UCR degree in bamboozling. How about that, Rome? Would you like that? You know how you'd get that, Rome?
Talk to me, Tony.
Once I'm done with this phone call, I'll tell you. So these guys, they get there. They swiftly go to their little keyboards, like the keyboard jockeys that they are. But you know what, Rome? I bet you that I'm in their mind in that moment, Rome. They're writing an email about who? About me. And guess what, clones? I ain't going anywhere. I'm going to be here. I'm going to stay. I'm going to fight. Like you told everybody yesterday, Jim Rome. You told them, yo, why don't you come in here into the center of the smack-the-gon and tell this fool what's up? Well, I'm back, and I'm ready. Anybody, anywhere, anytime, like Max Holloway did. Finally, Rome, I want to give a shout-out. It's a shout-out. War Dan Hurley for making me believe, like he went back-to-back. A little guy out in Phoenix who was born and raised in Paramount, California, could hopefully one day go rack to rack. I'm out.
My man. How about that? You want to talk about reps? Reps, yo. You just need reps. Is that the same dude? Have some, clones. Hey, clones, tell him how his ass tastes. How about that? Love it. My man. Tony in Phoenix clapping back.
Good night now!